What's cracking, folks? I'm Jared Dubin, and this is Quo Vadimus. We're talking today about the Goon Squad Memphis Grizzlies. Very lucky to be joined by Kevin Leip, who covers the Grizz for the Memphis Flyer. Kevin, what's up, man?
How's it going, man? Doing all right?
I'm pretty good. Also pretty good, extremely surprisingly, although they have lost their last two games by, I think, a combined, like, what, 50, 60 points?
Probably more than 60.
Yeah, actually, looking at it now, it looks like it's 61 points combined over their last two games. Maybe things finally catching up to them. But the Grizzlies, they have about 47 guys out for the season right now. When they lost Marc Gasol for the season in early February, I basically thought everything was done for them. But looking at it now, I think they're 9-7 since Mark went down. Since the trade deadline, 8-7, you know, even after having gotten rid of Courtney Lee and Jeff Green, who were two of, you know, the very few healthy players on the squad. Right now they have, obviously, Gasol is out for the year. He underwent surgery. He fractured the navicular bone in his foot, which is, you know, a scary injury, and we'll talk about that in a bit. Mike Conley has been out for the last week or so. He's out with tendonitis in his Achilles. Zach Randolph has missed the last five games or so with a knee injury. Lance Stephenson, who had been putting up, like, you know, 40 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists a game, also hurt his wrist recently. He was out for the last game. Brandon Wright, again, is out with a knee injury. I feel like he's been out pretty much all year. I know I'm missing people. Birdman, who they traded for, is out with a shoulder injury. Vince Carter has been out for the last couple games with an injury. I mean, is there anybody on the team that's not hurt right now?
Nobody who's been a part of the rotation all year long except Tony Allen and Matt Barnes. That's it.
Right, even Matt Barnes, I think he had his first career triple-double the yeah. other day.
When you're the only guy who has played in the league for over 10 years who's actually on the roster,
it's wild. I mean, they've got guys I've literally never heard of suiting up. Like, they signed somebody named, I'm very sorry that I haven't heard of you, Briante Weber, from VCU, but I've never heard of this dude, and they signed him the other day.
And Hairston went down in the Houston game with some kind of groin injury, and he's going to be out. And so they've picked up another injury exception, and now they've signed another D-League 10-day guy. They've got four guys on 10 days out of the D-League, and those four guys are all going to play minutes tonight against the Timberwolves.
It's really insane. I mean, they signed Alex Stevenson, who I think was recently on the Clippers, or was it another team?
He was with the Grizzlies in camp. I think he got a 10-day look from somebody earlier.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It was the Clippers. They signed Ray McCallum as well. I think that was a 10-day also.
Yeah. All those guys are 10 days.
I mean, they had basically, you know, no point guard because Conley's been out and Mario Chalmers tore his Achilles. And then they had to release him because they needed another roster spot. I saw people complaining like, oh my God, how could they release Chalmers when he just got injured? That's such a dick move. He still gets all his money. His contract was fully guaranteed. It's not like they took money from him. They're still going to pay him. I heard right after that they want to bring him back even for next year, even though he might not play. Not just as goodwill, but because they liked him and wanted to keep him around. And he played very well, I thought, in his role for them throughout the season. And especially in the times that Conley was hurt, he filled in well, too.
Yeah, I thought he was having a really good year for the Grizzlies. He's certainly the best backup point guard maybe they've ever had, but certainly the best they've had in the past few years of playoff runs. I really hated to see that injury for him. I think they had already... They already wanted to keep him, I think, if they could afford him. And now that he's injured, I think he's going to be able to be signed for a much more reasonable price. And, you know, I think he's a guy that's definitely worth taking that kind of a gamble on. You know, he's going to be out for a long time. But if he even gets back to 80-90% of what he was, he's still going to be a good player.
Right. And that Achilles injury, I mean, it's something that literally nobody has come back from and been the same player. You know, even somebody like Wes Matthews, who's like Wolverine.
Yeah.
He still is shooting, you know, under 40% from the field this season. He's down around 35% from three when he's been like a 37-38% shooter. You know, you see Brandon Jennings, who at the same position and in the same age group as Chalmers, you know, he's not able to attack the paint quite as much as he was earlier on in his career. So I guess, you know, for Chalmers, obviously we'll have to see how he comes back from it. But the thing that I think works sort of in his favor is that, you know, he's not really like a speed or power type player. Like, he's very controlled. He takes a lot of spot up threes and does a lot of like organizing the offense. And those things should still be there when he comes back, I think. And that
he's a really crafty guy. I mean, his play is so much about his awareness of kind of what's going on around him. And, you know, that's not going anywhere.
Yeah, the concerning thing for me, I think, is his defense. Like, will he be able to move laterally as well as he does? Because that's something that just being able to plant and change direction and push off with power from that side of your body becomes much more difficult when you have an injury like that.
Yeah, and his defense was a big part of what made him such a great Conley replacement, you know? Because that's Conley was all over the place this year. He really was not having a good season to begin with. But before that, you know, he's been a really good.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had injuries at the start of the year too. You know, I talked for a Grizzlies piece that I did on, you know, how they were playing so much better after their slow start, which came out like 3 hours before it was announced that Mark was out for the year. I talked to Mark, and I talked to Mike, and I talked to Jaeger, I talked to a couple other guys on the team, and I, you know, I asked Mike about his struggles earlier on in the season, and he was talking about how, you know, he had some injuries in his lower leg, and that's how he knows he's not going to be able to really shoot well, and when his shot's not going, obviously because they operate in this spacing crunch so often because the team doesn't really have outside shooters, that takes away not only from his ability to get to the basket, but also the whole team's ability to score. Because he's really the one guy that has any stretch to him, other than, I guess, Vince, who wasn't playing quite as much at the start of the year.
Yeah. Well, and Vince, I think it's interesting. You know, I think his kind of goal for this season was to pick his spots and kind of fill in. You know, play 10-15 minutes a night and just kind of be veteran leadership and that kind of stuff. And then everybody gets hurt, and Vince is kind of thrown into action as, okay, Vince, you're going to play 30 minutes a night, and you need to be a scorer, and you have to take over these games now. And then he got hurt. You know,
it's not surprising, really, that he got hurt. You know, I mean, he's almost 40 now. I mean, he's 39 years old. I mean, it's when you push yourself that much, especially when, you know, he's been a, not 10-15 minute guy, but a 15 to 25 minute guy now for 5-6 years almost, you know, going back to Dallas and Phoenix and, you know, been sort of a off-the-bench role player type of guy. When you all of a sudden have to ramp it all the way back up to the levels you were at, it's a really, really difficult transition.
I think exactly that is why so many of these guys are getting hurt. I mean, it's kind of a cascading thing, right? You're taking all of your role players and saying, okay, you have to play 40 minutes tonight because we have seven guys, and of course they get hurt. You know, it's almost like signing these guys out of the D League who are going to put it all on the line because they, you know, it's their audition. That's your safest bet, right? Because they're not going to get hurt because they're used to playing 10 minutes.
Right. And I mean, it even pushes guys like Jamichael Green into playing like almost 30 minutes a game over these last couple weeks. Like, Ryan Holland is starting playing 25 minutes a night. I mean, they signed Weber, I think, and in the first game he played like 35 minutes.
There was 39. He almost played 40 minutes.
40 minutes, yeah. And then the second game is the one I'm looking at. He played 35.
Yeah.
But you look at it, I mean, just the guys that they have on 10 days, in the most recent game they played when they got blown out by the Rockets, McCallum, Stevenson, and Weber, these guys took 27, 35 shots between them. I mean, that's an insane load for guys that, you know, ideally are guys that you're just throwing out there for like 5 minutes each to see what you might have. And they're like playing gigantic roles for a team that, I mean, in all honesty, is probably still going to make the playoffs. Like, they're pretty firmly, not necessarily locked in, but if they win three or four more games, I think, in the rest of the season, that pretty much locks it up. I mean, they're 4.5 games ahead of the sixth seed and seven games ahead of the nine.
Yeah, I was saying back in January, you know, they've had such a weird year, and I was just kind of saying, look, they only need to win 42, 43 games this year to make the playoffs, and here we are, the middle of March, and that still looks true to me. I mean, they're 4.5 games up on the Blazers for fifth place. They're closer to the Clippers in fourth place than they are to the Blazers.
Right, and you know that particular matchup is one of my favorites. That they've had some absolute wars in a couple of years in the playoffs. I still remember when I first started covering the league like 4 or 5 years ago. They had a great series. They played each other again, I think, the next year. And it kind of sucks that the Grizzlies aren't going to have, like, their real team to go against those guys, because I love watching, you know, Gasol and Conley and Tony and Zach go against Blake and Chris and DeAndre and even I don't even... Actually, I'm not sure if Redick was there for the two playoff series yet.
2013 was the last time they played.
Right. So... And Redick came after that season?
Yeah, I think he was the next year. Yeah. I could be wrong, but
he might have been there for the second playoff series between the two teams. But you know, either way, like, that was something that at the start of the season I was like, I hope these guys play in the playoffs again. Like, and now they're almost definitely going to, but it's not going to be like the real matchup, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, their series. Clippers-Grizzlies series are always just so violent.
Yeah, our friend Matt Moore calls it, like, Pepto whiskey.
Yeah.
Because it's because it gives you heartburn, but you also need to drink copious amounts of liquor. And I've always thought that was a very apt name for those series.
You know, I one of my favorite basketball memories was being in the building for that game 6 in 2013 where the Grizzlies knocked out the Clippers, and it was, you know, Chris Paul got ejected, Zach Randolph got ejected, and like Tony Allen popped his jersey and Zebo skipped into the tunnel. Yeah, that was a Joey Crawford game, obviously. And you know, it was like being at WrestleMania. Like, the crowd was just, it was mean. They were playing like Motorhead in the arena, and I was sitting next to the guy who was tweeting from the Clippers team account, and he kind of looked at me like, "Are you people really like this?" Like, it was pretty great.
That's been like my favorite part of, you know, I've made no secret about loving this Grizzlies team over the last few years, like the grit and grind Grizz. You know, and I've been very open about why as well. It's because they remind me of my favorite teams ever, the 1990s Knicks. You know, there's not like one-to-one comparisons. Like, Gasol is not Patrick Ewing, and Randolph is not Charles Oakley, and Conley is not like Derek Harper. But the way they play and the attitude they have, and the way that the attitude and the character of the team matches the attitude and the character of the city, reminds me so much of that group of teams that like made me fall in love with basketball.
Yeah.
And that game and that series was like the perfect encapsulation of that relationship, you know, between team and city, which I think they've really sort of taken on the personality of each other almost. Would you, is that something, I mean, you're there, would you agree? I would imagine you agree with that.
Yeah, I do. And I think it's something that, you know, from talking to the guys on the team that they're aware of and they embrace, you know. I did a big magazine interview thing with Gasol, just kind of about his relationship with the city. And, you know, he is a guy who moved here in high school and didn't know English at all. And, you know, this is kind of his home here, you know. I mean, I think that attitude has kind of flowed from him to everybody else. You know, you take a guy like Zach Randolph, who basically was a locker room cancer, right? Nobody wanted him. He was a radioactive asset. And he came to Memphis. And
they basically got paid to take him on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And even people in Memphis at the time were like, do we want this guy on our team? And, you know, just to see how he was embraced and how he kind of embraced his role, you know, it's really interesting. I do think that Memphis and the Grizzlies have kind of risen together, right? There's a lot of energy in Memphis now that kind of wasn't here 5-6 years ago. And the Grizzlies were a joke of a basketball franchise before. You know, they made the playoffs before, but they got swept 3 years in a row. And before that, they were the Vancouver Grizzlies with Big Country, right? That was the punchline. So, you know, they feed off of each other. They give each other an identity, right, an energy to kind of draw from.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's not just, I think, you know, the overall team, but it's that core of four guys that's been together for, I guess, 4 or 5 years now with Conley, Gasol, and Zach. And Tony Allen, I mean, though Tony and Zach, I think especially, you know, even though Gasol and Conley are the two best players now, but Tony and Zach especially are like the grit and grind guys. Like, when I think of that team, like obviously I'll think of the four of them all playing together, but those two guys are sort of the personification of it, and in a way they're also like the guys that are sort of like throwback players. Like Tony Allen is a guy that in 5 years, that type of player, I'm not sure if he'll exist in the league anymore.
Right.
And even Z-Bo, like a back to the basket or face up from like 15 feet, big man, that's someone that I'm not sure is going to have a big kind of role in the league anymore either. You know, just because of how much shooting is taking over the league and the ability to not just face up and jab step and take a jumper, but face up and go by your guy with speed and not necessarily power. And those are the guys that have given the team its identity. And I think it's really interesting that they've been able to find so much success. You know, obviously not that necessarily, you know, elite playoff success in terms of going to the finals or winning the finals, but this is a team that's winning, you know, 50 plus games a year, going on 4 or 5 years as sort of an anachronism, and that's really special.
Yeah. Well, you know, also just kind of talking about the character of the city, right? I mean, Memphis is the poorest major city in America. It's a working class town. It's a blue collar town. It's a majority black town. I mean, you look at just these guys, they just, everything about Memphis is reflected, especially Tony and Zach, right? They show up, they go to work, they're tough, they don't take it off of anybody. I mean, it's just, yeah, there are not two more appropriate guys in the NBA to be kind of these, basically spirit animals of the Grizzlies franchise. I mean, everything they're about on the court is something that I think people from Memphis would say about themselves.
That makes definitely a lot. Like, it doesn't even make sense that there's a team in Memphis.
it really doesn't.
And the fact that they've been able to succeed with this group of guys is pretty incredible. I mean, it's, and just I know a lot of people don't like watching them because the games are slow and every possession takes like 15, 20 seconds to materialize. And, you know, the passing has to be so perfect for them to get an open shot. But for me, it just, it brings me back, man. I love it. It's a slog and it's a chore to watch. But if you like that kind of stuff, which for most other teams I don't, but for this group of guys I do, it's rewarding watching them too, especially because of how well they work together on defense. And that was something that I wrote about last year as well with their defensive communication, which those guys are some of the best in the league at that too.
Yeah, they absolutely are. I mean, you know, I'm not going to lie. There's definitely times when I watch the Warriors or I watch the Spurs, and I'm just like, man, I wish I could watch that 41 times a year instead of just this ugly, slow, hope we score 90 points kind of style of play. You know, it's definitely not the most appealing kind of basketball night in, night out, but if they played any other way, you wouldn't have these moments, right? I mean, just the other night, they went into overtime against the Pelicans and with no players. And, you know, it's the way that they play, the fact that they need their defensive intensity to be so high to even win against the Pelicans right now is just, it's like must-see TV, I think. They have to play on a regular basis. And this, not even just talking about the Goon Squad right now, but just over the last 5 years, they have to play so hard just to beat some of these teams that it's just compelling in a way. Like they won all of these games through violence and effort. It's not through motion. It's not through ball movement. It's not through, you know, shooting from the logos. It's through effort, and it's through beating people up, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I am typically a person that hates when people say, like, oh, defense is all about effort. That's more true with the Grizzlies than it is with any other team. Yeah. Because it's not even like, you know, Marc Gasol is, like, the quickest guy in the world that he should be able to cover as much ground as he does or as he has over the last few years. He just knows exactly where to be and when and is able to get there because he's like a really smart dude and works at getting to the right spots at the right times. You know, Tony Allen obviously is an incredible athlete, but he also just, you know, works ridiculously hard, not just in terms of his on-the-court play, but you walk into that locker room. I don't think I've ever been in the Grizzlies locker room and seen Tony Allen not simultaneously getting treatment, watching plays on an iPad, and talking to somebody all the way across the room at the same time. Like, yeah. that dude is insane.
He is, and he just refuses to be screened, you know? It's about his mentality, it's about his effort. You're not going to screen him off of his guy.
Yeah, and I mean, he also just knows what everybody wants to do. Like, I asked him a random question about their defensive communication last year, and he was like, yeah, I don't listen to any of that because I know what they're doing already. He's like, and he walks me through a play from, like, 3 weeks ago when they were playing Dallas, and he's like, so Dirk is on the block, and my guy's in the corner, and I know when my guy starts to go over towards Dirk, it's a decoy. He's not doing anything. He's going to set a screen, and Dirk's either going to come up or he's going to pop out. And I can just ignore my guy for a second because he's not getting the ball. And then I'll just go back to him because I know I can get there. And I was just like, all right, man, you do you.
Yeah, he and Gasol both are just, they're maniacs about knowing exactly every tendency of their opponent. They know all of the plays that everybody's going to run against them.
Absolutely, and that's what I think, you know, has made the fact that over these last few weeks, they've actually been able to win games. I mean, obviously, Tony has been playing, but without Gasol, who was sort of the quarterback in the back of the defense, obviously all big men are, but, you know, I think for this Memphis team in particular, it's so important because, you know, a couple of the guys in front of them, you know, Zach isn't necessarily a great individual defender, but they're able to make it work because they always get guys in the right position. And the way that, that Mark and Conley work together in guarding ball screens is so good. But without, you know, all three of those guys, and then all of a sudden Tony's out there and he's playing in front of Ryan Hollins and in front of Jamichael Green, who, you know, may turn into a good player someday, but he's also a rookie. I mean, it doesn't make sense that these guys can still play defense with this goon squad out there.
No, it really doesn't. And I mean, I think another thing that is crazy to me that they're still able to defend without Gasol is Gasol. Gasol is Tony's safety net, right? I mean, Tony, we're talking about how well he prepares and stuff, but he's a gambler, right? But he can do that with Gasol behind him because he knows Gasol is going to be there to catch whatever gets past him. And without that there, for them to still be able to, you know, to play pretty good defense, even though Tony has not really changed how he's playing, I that's incredible to me.
Yeah, I mean, it makes no sense. Like a lot of things with this Grizzlies team, it's incredible that they've been able to do this. And, you know, to me also, it's strange to see them running their offense through different guys too, because, you know, you watch them over the years and you know that it's going to be pick and rolls for Conley and Gasol up high, or Gasol at the elbow, or Zach on the block. And now all of a sudden, like, Lance Stephenson is at the controls of everything, and Jamichael Green has taken 17 shots in a game, and guys that I've never heard of are doing things. I mean, what has it been like, you know, because you've been covering the team, obviously, for a while, what has it been like to just see different guys at the controls of things for a team that's been, you know, very much the same for a while? Because they're, you know, other than the Spurs, their core has probably been together longer than anyone in the league.
Yeah, it's been strange. You know, I think in Jamichael Green, you've got a guy who, even as late as kind of the end of last season, you could look at him and see that he was kind of starting to figure things out. I think he's a really good player who has deserved more minutes than he's gotten this year. But, you know, I think Jaeger kind of has an over-reliance on veterans sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's a classic pitfall for an NBA coach to fall into. And, you know, I think what's going on right now has kind of stripped him of that because he doesn't have any options. And so I think part of what you're seeing is guys who maybe should have been getting minutes anyway finally getting unleashed. I mean, I think that's definitely the case with Jamichael. It's also good to see Jarrell Martin.
I forgot about Jarrell Martin. Do you think that's a good sign that I forgot about him?
Yeah, maybe. You know, because he broke his foot in training camp, and so his conditioning is all out of whack. He didn't get to practice much. And to even given all of those things, for him to still be out there, you know, he's not doing anything great, but he looks like an NBA player.
Yeah, I mean, over the last 4 or 5 games or so, I think he's averaging like 10, 11 points a game, something like that.
Yeah, and so for a rookie, you know, the Grizzlies have traditionally been the place where first-round draft picks go to die, right? They just don't play, they never develop, and then they get traded. And so to see Jarrell out there just even playing and acquitting himself like a professional basketball player, you know, that's a sign of encouragement. That's something that you might not necessarily have seen. You almost definitely wouldn't have seen if they hadn't had this injury crisis. You know, so if there are going to be silver linings, it's that kind of stuff. It's guys finally getting a chance to get some daylight in a rotation that's been so crowded with just veteran players for a really long time.
That's definitely true. I think, you know, a lot of the, like, not necessarily excitement, but the fascination with the Goon Squad also came from Lance, because he looked, I mean, not necessarily through 100% fault of his own, because Doc will just bury guys if he doesn't like the way they're playing for like 3 days. But he was basically done in in LA, once he stopped starting, Doc was kind of just done with him. Like, every once in a while, he'd play 25 minutes or so. But he didn't seem to be, like, a real part of their rotation. Like, it was just like Doc was throwing him out there because he was on the team.
He didn't seem integrated into what they were doing at all.
Right. And, you know, then he comes in to Memphis. Everybody thinks, like, you know, they're done with the season. Mark's out. There's no way they're ever going to bring him back next. Everybody thought they were going to cut him right away. Not even just not bring him back next year because he's got a non-guaranteed deal. But people were just like, oh, okay, they're going to take that first-round pick and they're going to cut Lance. Because why would they ever have Lance and Birdman and Tony Allen and Zeebo all on the same team? These guys have to be, and Matt Barnes on that, and Chalmers on the same team. These guys have to be out of their minds. And then they keep him, and he's playing 25, 30 minutes a night, and he's putting up, like, near triple doubles. And he looks kind of like the Lance that he was in Indiana for, like, half a season that one year.
Yeah, well, I think you hit it on the head. Why do they bring all these guys in? It's because they are crazy, right?
Right.
That's why this locker room works.
It defies the, like, you can only have one knucklehead theory because they have, like, six of them.
Yeah, they have six of them, but I think the important thing that people maybe overlook about the Grizzlies, and I don't really know why, Zach Randolph runs that locker room. I mean, nobody's gonna, if Zach tells you what to do, you do it. Zach is the only guy who can pull Tony Allen aside during a timeout and say, hey, quit shooting jump shots. I mean, he uses different language than that.
You can use the language he uses on here if you want.
Do what?
You can use that language if you want.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, so I have seen Zach Randolph pull Tony Allen aside and say, quit fucking shooting jump shots. And Tony does. There's definitely an element of craziness in that locker room, but there's a hierarchy, right? I think there's also just a respect for guys who play hard. I mean, there were the reports that kind of leaked around the end of the Jeff Green era that there was discontent in the locker room with Jeff because he wasn't putting forward enough effort, especially on defense. Like, guys were just questioning his effort. And that's really kind of the only thing that's unforgivable in the Grizzlies locker room is effort. If you're playing hard and you are getting along with everybody, it's not like Thunderdome in there. Everybody likes each other. Everybody gets along, and they're just kind of, at this point, they're all just kind of in it together to get out of the season alive. But I think kind of the dangers of having that many guys in this locker room, we kind of overstate it, because I think it's just they get along, they're crazy, but they know they're crazy, and they appreciate that about each other. And I think it's an interesting blend of guys, to be sure, but nobody's getting too far out of line.
And it's also like Barnes is really the only one that's still, like, legitimately crazy. Like, Zeebo, I think his issues are sort of accepted to be in the past at this point. Like, obviously he's still an emotional guy and things like that, and Tony the same, but neither of those guys have had, like, problems, really. Like, right. Barnes is the only one causing ruckus. Even Chalmers is more just, like, prickly than he is, like, any kind of issue, and same with Tony and Zach, and even Birdman is more just a personality than he is any kind of crazy dude.
Yeah. Crazy, but he's, like, fun crazy.
Right. Exactly. And Lance is more just, like, he plays wild than he is, like, a crazy person. And he does weird shit sometimes, like, blow in people's ears. Obviously, he does have stuff in his past, but...
Yeah.
You know... That I don't think anything of that kind has crept up since then.
I think Chalmers especially was just kind of being glad to not be getting yelled at a lot. I think there was kind of that little brother dynamic in Miami. And I think once he got to the Grizzlies, I think everybody was, I think it was a definitely a different dynamic for him in Memphis. You know, it was, okay, you're one of us now. It's not, we have to tell you what to do on a regular basis. It's, you know, a different vibe. I think that kind of unleashed in him some really good play. You know, he played with a lot of confidence, and you know, I think it's a, for the cast of characters that they have, I really think it's a pretty united and accepting locker room.
Yeah, I mean, you're closer to it than me, so that's, you know, obviously defer to you on that. And I also haven't seen them since the trades, but you know, whenever I've gone in there when they've been in New York, obviously it's always been one of my favorite locker rooms to go into, because those guys are just great.
Yeah, and they're hilarious too.
Oh yeah, and look, it's always funny because these guys have been so good for so long, and they're so good to talk to. Also, like Gasol and Conley and Tony Allen, and these guys are unbelievable. And we'll talk your ear off for like 15, 20 minutes about what literally whatever you want to talk about. And you go into those locker rooms and it's just me and Marc Gasol sometimes. And I'm like, what is going on here? You know, last year it wasn't quite as much like that because everybody wanted to ask him about free agency. And then the same thing with Conley this year. But I even said to my, I was like, I'm not going to ask you about free agency because what the fuck are you going to say? Like, no, I'm not going to consider the Knicks. Like, how stupid would that be? But those guys are great, and it's a great locker room to be in. And that's why, for me, I'm getting a little sad about the, I think what we, we'll, I guess, you know, I think, I'll see if you agree, is probably, you know, the impending end of the grit and grind era. You know, I still think Conley's going to re-sign, but I do think that at this point this summer, there are probably going to have to be some sweeping changes made to the rest of the roster. Do you, is that where you're at too, that that's sort of coming down the pipe at this point?
I think it's coming. I honestly don't know that it's coming this summer. If you're talking sweeping in terms of they're going to have to trade Zach Randolph or something like that, I don't necessarily know that that's coming this summer. I think their plan is to, obviously their plan is to re-sign Conley, and then obviously the biggest issue they've had going back to before Rudy Gay was traded is production at the wing spots. They've got to get somebody who can shoot well and who can play defense to start a small forward. That's been their biggest problem for 6, 7, 8 years now. But, you know, I don't know that this is necessarily the end of Zach and Tony being on the team. Do I think by the end of next year, Zach Randolph will still be the starting power forward? Not necessarily. You know, we saw him come off the bench some this year behind Jeff Green, which is, I still don't really understand. But, you know, I think if it were a Jamichael Green, say he grows into a guy who can play 30 minutes a night, and then Z-Bo comes in and plays 20. You know, I think something like that may be what they're thinking for next year. I don't know.
Yeah, and look, under the new cap, I mean, Zach's going to be making like 10% of the cap next season.
Yeah.
That's a heck of a deal. I mean, that's the only year left on it, but he's more than worth his money for his production next season, you know?
Well, yeah, I actually looked on Basketball Reference at the guys 34 or older who have his, what did I look at? Like his total rebound percentage, his offensive rebound percentage, and his usage rate. And you're looking at guys like it's Moses Malone and Robert Parrish and like maybe one or two other guys and Zach Randolph. Not bad. David Robinson was one of them, I think, maybe. I mean, not bad company to be in.
No, that's pretty good. And yeah, I mean, so it may not necessarily happen next season because, you know, like you said, it's Zach's last year of his contract anyway. It's Tony's last year of his contract anyway. But at a certain point, I would imagine they are going to have to pivot into sort of a different team. And, I mean, what do you think that even looks like? I mean, I would imagine a team centered around Conley and Gasol. You know, still going to have those guys do like their dance and the high pick and roll. Mm-hmm. Still going to play, you know, the sort of a similar style of defense, just because so much of it is going to involve the two of them anyway, because of how much pick and roll the rest of the league runs. But, you know, like you said, someone that can shoot and play defense at small forward. But I think, you know, another big issue for them over these last few years has been the fact that nobody other than Conley can create off the dribble. And I think that that was a lot of the thought process behind getting Jeff Green in the first place.
Yeah.
But the mistake was that he can't actually create good shots off the dribble. He can just create shots off the dribble.
Right. Yeah.
And mostly for himself and not necessarily for anyone else.
Yeah, can I just say that I am so thankful that I don't have to watch Jeff Green take pull-ups from 15 feet or try to post somebody up. And it's like when he's posting somebody up, he just forgets that he can pass the ball out of the post.
and look, the same exact thing that people said when the Celtics got Jeff Green is the same thing that people said when the Grizzlies got Jeff Green is the same thing that people said when the Clippers got Jeff Green. Oh, he can play multiple positions. He can work with the ball in his hands. He can shoot. But then it's like, he can't play multiple positions because he can't guard threes because he's not quick enough. And he can't guard fours because he's not strong enough and doesn't guard well enough in space to guard stretch guys. And
yeah. He just lacks the awareness to be a good defender of anybody but, like, ball handlers.
Right. So there's a difference between being able to play multiple positions and having to play multiple positions because you don't really fit in either one. Like, it's the difference between being a tweener and being, like, a combo forward.
Right.
Which, you know, so, like, someone like Tobias Harris or Aaron Gordon is more of a combo forward and Jeff Green is a tweener. If that makes sense. Or like, or a better example, like Carmelo is a combo forward who can play the three and the four, and Jeff Green can't play either.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
And he can't shoot. Like, he looks like he should be able to shoot. He can't shoot.
Rudy Gay is a better combo forward.
Than absolutely. Shooter. Absolutely. And I think that's, you know, a player archetype that they actually do need. You know, someone who can slide between those two positions that can not only shoot, but can also put the ball on the floor. Because they really have not had any off-the-dribble threats at all. Coming from the perimeter. Like, obviously, Gasol and Randolph can face up in the post, work from 15, 20 feet and in, and do their crafty little stuff off the dribble. But there really hasn't been anyone that can, you know, puncture the defense outside in and draw guys away from shooters or draw guys away from someone under the basket. That's been something they've really, really been missing.
Well, that's why that's a reason I'm intrigued to see what they do with Lance. You know, I still don't think they pick up that option. But if there's some way that maybe they can get him for $6 million a year for 2 years or, you know, some kind of deal like that, you know, I think it's worth it if he can play at this level for a whole season.
Yeah, and look, Lance is another guy who matches the, you know, the city of Memphis, I think, very well, and can sort of, you know, he's not obviously as good a defender as Tony Allen, but, you know, when he's really locked in, he can play very good on-ball defense, a little bit spacey off the ball, if his guy isn't directly running around a screen and that he can track, but sort of similar style of play, but can do more with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think the thing, if you're thinking about whether a guy is going to be a good fit for the vibe of the Memphis Grizzlies, I think the most important thing to think about is that Memphis is like the pro wrestling cradle of America. Like, it's probably a pro wrestling town before it was a basketball town.
Even more than like the Memphis Tigers?
Probably not more than the Tigers, but you know, like Jerry Lawler is from here, and over the years, all kinds of major wrestlers have like gotten their starts here or come through here at some point. We used to have like this really big independent wrestling promotion here, and it's a huge wrestling town. And so if you're thinking about, is this guy going to fit with the Grizzlies, you think about, would a wrestling crowd like this guy? I mean, it's all about heels and faces, right? And, I mean, I think that's why, you know, if it would fit in at WrestleMania on a basketball court, the Grizzlies, he's going to work on the Grizzlies. So I think that's kind of a good encapsulation of the vibe.
Yeah, that is a really, really good explanation. I can't claim to know quite as much about wrestling, but I dig the analogy, so works for me. Is there anyone else from sort of this Goon Squad unit that's not signed through next year that you could see sticking around, whether it's just for next year or for long term?
Not really. I think Barnes is going to get more money than the Grizzlies want to pay him this summer. I mean, Tony's got another year on his contract. Lance is the only question mark. I think I genuinely I don't have a read on whether they're planning on keeping him or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It conceptually, I think it makes sense, but in practice, not sure you necessarily want to throw that much combustion into the mix, especially if you're trying to eventually move forward with a different kind of team. And that's something I think, I mean, I really don't even know. I mean, what do you think a team, you know, we sort of got off track there, still talking about what the team needs, but what do you think a team, let's say after next year, that they move on from Zach, move on from Tony, even Vince, I think, is up after next year.
Mm-hmm.
The only guys that would be really signed beyond that point are Jamichael Green, Jerome Morton, Gasol. I think Jordan Adams, if they pick up his option, would still be under contract as well.
Yeah.
And then assuming they re-sign Conley, I mean, what does the next version of the Grizzlies even look like?
Honestly, I really don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, it sort of depends on, obviously, on who they wind up signing. They do owe a first-round pick to Boston, if I'm remembering correctly.
Well, they owe two first-round picks. And this is why that Jeff Green trade was particularly disastrous. So the pick, they owe a pick. If they don't make the playoffs this year, they owe a pick to Denver. And if they make the playoffs this year, I think the pick probably conveys next year. That was the pick that they traded to Cleveland with, like, Maurice Spates,
right.
Wayne Ellington, and Josh Selby, I think. And
it has, like weird protections this year, right? It's, like,
yeah,
it's top five and then playoffs?
15.
Yeah. Right.
It's 1 through 5 and then, like, 15 through 30.
Right, and then so they owe a 2018 pick also? Or I guess it's 2 years after the one goes to Denver, they owe another one to Boston.
Yeah, which is the Jeff Green one.
Right.
And it's got protections on it too, but I'm not sure what they are.
And they're owed a bunch of second-round picks. They traded for like four or five of them at the deadline.
Yeah.
And then they got the Clippers pick, whatever it is, 2 years after the Clippers owe a pick to one of the 97 teams they owe a pick to. So they do make up for the fact that they have some picks going out, for the fact that they have some picks going in as well. And I would imagine that, you know, at least some of those guys are going to wind up shaping the team as well.
Yeah. Well, and I definitely think that their intention is to use those seconds that they've been stockpiling as kind of to grease more moves, whether that's for more first-round picks or for players or what. I definitely think that was the goal, was to just stockpile as many tradable assets as you can get at the deadline for without taking on any more money.
Right. And people love to say, second-round picks don't turn into anything enough to matter, but they matter a lot for, like you said, for greasing teams and trades.
Mm-hmm. Well, and every now and then they turn into Draymond Green. So
yeah.
I think it's just so hard to talk about this, right? Because this summer is so so up in the air. You know, you've got Gasol for four more seasons. I assume they're going to re-sign Conley. I assume he's going to get some sort of a max deal. I don't know that it'll be a true max with the max raises, honestly. I think even if they do that, his health long-term is kind of a pretty big question mark to me. He spends a lot of time banged up because he spends a lot of time on the floor.
Yep. Well, that's why the fact that they haven't had a good backup point guard for, like, forever has been so big, you know?
Yeah, I think Gasol and Conley both have a lot more mileage on them than it probably seems like they do. I really don't know what direction they're going to take this team. I don't know that they... Clearly, they're not going to be able to double down on, you know, two-man high-low post-game and high pick and roll forever. Right, they've got to figure out how to do something else, and you know, I think there's also a question of Dave Yeager's got a couple more years on his contract. Is he the guy you want to kind of steer the vision of the future of your team? Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. You know, they've got to really this summer take a look at themselves top to bottom and say now what? You know, I think I actually wrote a couple of days before the season started that I thought this was kind of a stealth rebuilding year, that I didn't think they were going to have a chance to get out of the West, and they had a lot of guys on contract and contract years, and they had a lot of decisions to make, and that's kind of played out. I mean, obviously with the injury stuff, I didn't see any of that coming, but you know, this is a really, really critical summer to the Grizzlies to make up their minds about who they want to be.
Yeah, I mean, this year and next year, obviously, will sort of shape whatever the future is going to become. I think it's a really interesting transition because, again, they've been able to have a surprising amount of success, you know, as an anachronism. It's not a team that looks anything like really any other team in the league right now, which is, you know, and to have success that way is very unusual and, you know, To me, I've had a lot of fun watching it. I know not a lot of other people have, but you know, it's one of the more fascinating stories to watch, I think, over the next couple of years. You know, just watching a team that plays very differently transition to becoming, you know, a modern basketball team. It's going to be interesting to watch, especially because they have, you know, they have one of their foundational pieces locked in already, and, you know, he's not old, but he's not young either. You know, Mark is, what is he, 30?
He's 31. Yeah.
31, and Conley will be 29 by the start of next season. So you're already talking about two guys who, you know, throughout the course of their contracts, you know, will be, you know, not in their peak and probably, you know, in slight decline, just because of the way the age curve works.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they fortify behind them, what age group of players they use to do that as well. Because ideally you would want, you know, younger guys that are going to get better over the course of their contracts, but younger guys aren't necessarily what gets you wins right away. And if your two best players are in their late 20s, early 30s, you know, you're in position to be trying to win right away, you know. That's so it's going to be interesting to watch them balance that type of stuff as well.
You know, I definitely think that what they're trying to do is kind of what the Spurs have done, which is just find the right young guys to plug in, like a Kawhi Leonard, or even like a Splitter who can just kind of
Splitter or Danny Green or whoever, like guys that are sort of mid-career, or I guess like early veterans, like in their fourth to seventh or eighth year in the league, makes a lot of sense for them, to me.
Yeah, and I think that's what they want to do. Whether they can do that successfully, I mean, not everybody's the Spurs.
Right, and those guys typically cost, you know?
Yeah, well, but I think that's the model, you know, so that's the model that they're going to emulate. To me, I mean, Robert Pera has even said that we want to be like the Spurs. We want to emulate how they have built their team and how they run their organization. And you know, I think you compare that to Yeah, you know, it's that at the end of the day, teams in Memphis, right? They're not going to be able to spend the kind of money and just sign the kind of free agents that, you know, it's not going to be like Cleveland where they just threw all of the money at everybody. You can't build a team that way in Memphis and have it be sustainable long term. You know, it's a small market. It's probably the smallest market, I think. And you know, you have to be conscious of that kind of stuff here.
I think Oklahoma City might be smaller, but I do want to touch on the last thing just because you brought up Robert Pera. The report from ESPN earlier this week about the quote-unquote turmoil within the Memphis ownership group and, you know, Steve Kaplan and Robert Pera, sort of a dispute over the shares within the team and this 2017, I guess sort of like a mutual option for one of them to buy the other out at whatever the buy-sell clause, whatever it is, whatever the price is. I mean, this was the first I personally had heard of it. Is this something that's been sort of brewing for a while? Is it something that, you know, that you think is concerning, something that's, you know, out there but not necessarily a big issue?
I would say it's not a big issue now. It has the potential to be a big issue. the buy-sell clause stuff, basically 5 years from the purchase date of the team, so in October of next year, 2017, Steve Kaplan and Daniel Strauss can basically invoke an option where either they set the valuation for the team, and then either they buy Robert Pera's shares or Robert Pera has to buy their shares. I mean, basically, the backstory on all of this and why this is brewing, you know, Robert Pera wanted to buy the team all by himself back in 2012, and there was, like, the crash of the price of Ubiquiti stock, and he owns Ubiquiti Networks. That's his, like, Wi-Fi hardware company mm-hmm. he started. And so he had to bring in more investors to be able to complete the sale. It ended up with a really big ownership group with a lot of small local owners. And then Steve Kaplan has a pretty big share. And then Robert Pera is the controlling owner. And the, you know, the issue that created was basically you had Jason Levien was the guy who kind of helped orchestrate some of this putting together of the ownership group. And so, you know, obviously Levien was let go by the team.
Right.
And I think there's kind of a sense there from Kaplan and some of the other guys are like, well, you know, we bought into this because Levien wanted us to, and we were kind of dealing with him. And I think that's kind of what has set up some of this quote-unquote turmoil. I think the other issue also is just Kaplan needs the money from his share of the Grizzlies to be able to complete the Wolves stuff. I don't know that that's true, but, you know, he has to sell the Grizzlies share anyway to buy the Wolves share.
Right, sort of like Vivek had to sell his Warriors shares right before he bought the Kings.
Yeah, so, I mean, the way the ownership stuff works, you know, I just don't really see this as a big issue right now. I think it's just kind of a squabble over how much money is Kaplan able to get from his shares, how many shares does he have, that kind of stuff. Just, it's all because of this Wolf stuff. I think what could get interesting is this deal in 2017. You know, is Kaplan going to sell his share of the Grizzlies and buy into the Wolves? And then whoever buys his share, force Pera to buy them out later? You know, it could get interesting. I think the most likely scenario, if they do invoke that clause, is Pera just buys them out, right? Ubiquiti is in a much more secure, safe stock position now. He's got a lot more kind of, you know, I guess you'd call it cap space to spend, you know, but we'll see. We'll see what happens when we get there. But for right now, I just don't, the sense that I've gotten from talking to, you know, people with the team and some other people around town is that this is not really anything new. It's just kind of being reported as new, if that makes sense.
That definitely makes sense. And look, I disagree with you. I think the most likely thing that's going to happen is that Justin Timberlake is going to co-own the Grizzlies by himself with Peyton and Ashley Manning, and that's going to be it.
Yeah, that's possible. You know, that's the other likely outcome here, because Justin Timberlake he's going to do something between now and next year that's going to get him about $800 million. And
yeah, he's going to start the anti-title and take over the streaming video space.
It's gonna be called High Tide.
Right. Yeah. Nothing was better than, you know, the Knicks. They have their dance team. They haven't danced to a song from the 21st century all season, and then the Grizzlies come and they're dancing to Justin Timberlake. I thought it was hilarious. Anyway,
could do some Al Green or something.
Yeah. Right. Oh God. All right, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate it. Do you want to let everyone know where they can find your stuff, find you on Twitter, things like that?
Yeah, I don't always have like an immediate recap after every game, but pretty much every game and kind of random thoughts around there. You can find my stuff at memphisflyer.com. I write the Beyond the Arc blog there. I also write, you know, stuff for the paper. We do actually have a print newspaper, which is weird in these days, I know.
What's that?
Have you heard of a newspaper? Do you remember those?
Yeah. My dad used to read those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I'm in the paper sometimes. That stuff is on the web, too. You can find me on Twitter, Flyer Grizz Blog, with one Z, which is weird, but that's kind of the style decision we've decided on in Memphis, mostly because it saves a character on Twitter, honestly. But yeah, it's Flyer Grizz Blog. And MemphisFlyer.com, and yeah, that's it.
Cool. Everyone, make sure you check out Kevin's stuff. You can also obviously find all of our podcasts for the HP Basketball Network on HardwoodParoxysm.com. Click on the link at the top of the page for the podcast center, or by going to iTunes or Stitcher or Blog Talk Radio. And you can follow me on Twitter at JADubin5. And we're actually going to have another podcast for you guys later today with Ian Levy talking about the Sloan Sports Conference. So that should be good as well. Kevin, thanks a lot, man.